I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, My Son, the General.
We are your host of TMI.
Tamika and My Son's information, truth, motivation, and inspiration.
New name, new energy, but
same old us.
What's up, My Son Lennon?
Listen, you know, we back.
Getting into
doing what we do. The TMI show, the number one podcast in the world. Get in tune.
It's so
you
funny.
Better get in tune.
Listen, but though I have folks asking how they can subscribe to the podcast. I want to make sure y'all do that. The information is available. It's in the caption. It is available on screen. I want to make sure that you all ensure that you are subscribed so you can listen to the whole podcast, the whole show, not just clips on social media, but also when you subscribe, it helps us to grow so that we can truly become the number one podcast.
Because we are the number one podcast in the world.
Right, we're just having to actualize.
We are.
Yeah. So please make sure you download wherever you listen to your podcast. You want to download, you want to be a subscriber, you want to make sure that if you are, you know, if your thing is, I want to support, I want to get the information and share it, make sure you subscribe to TMI. It is so important so that we can show these folks that our people are supporting us, and then we could keep our
number one spot.
Speaking of support, today I am rocking my Black owned brand. This is our brother Plies' trucker hat, and the name of his brand is King Circle. So if you sitting there right now like, oh, yeah, damn, I love this hat, you should go and get
and it.
This
says one says love.
But there are others. They have freedom. They have different words, quotes on them. It is his trucker hat. You know, Plies is known for his trucker hats. He's also becoming increasingly known for his political dialogue and his political understanding and the political gems that he has been dropping on socials. You know, I think it comes a time in everyone's life, doesn't matter who you are. If you're in tune with what's going on in the world, you could be an entertainer, you could be a stripper, you could be a baker, you could be a teacher, or whatever. But if you have a platform, you become responsible for educating yourself. And then at the point that you feel you're properly educated, you should do what you can to make sure that truth is in the atmosphere.
I love it. I love what Plies does. It's what we call edutainment. Mm-hmm. You know, it's absolutely education and it's entertainment. We should try to get Plies to come on the show. That'd be dope, you know, just to get a little commentary.
He sent me all the flavors, several colors of these hats. And so I've been rocking them. And today I was like, oh, let me throw this on.
Yeah, shout out to Plies. I done stole a couple from you because it was about 10 of them. So I took one or two of them.
Yeah, I still so, have more.
To support. Nothing but love, yeah, nothing well, but love.
You should have yours on
yeah,
next
just
time.
Make sure you send me a little kit package. You know what I'm saying, bro?
But we love you, Plies. Keep doing what you're doing. Yes, it's sir. Making a difference.
It sure is.
I wrote a comment on this page. They tore me up, but you know. I just
oh, they're going to tear us up
I
anyway.
Said, you know, when it became a preacher, the man on there saying, he hit the specific thing, and I saw you reshared it. The specific thing he said was that they do all these things to us, right? Like they ban the books, they hurt us and harm us in so many ways. I can't remember, but he had a list of all the things that folks are doing to us, elected officials and otherwise. They talk shit about us, they treat us like nothing. And then they turn around and sit back while we fight one another.
That's
we
right.
love fighting each other. But when it comes time to fight the powers that be, we're not always that good. Sometimes we are. Most times we are. But we could do better. We could do better. And we could spend a little less time fighting each other, fighting one another, tearing one another down, and put a lot more of our energy in pushing back against the system and the things that we claim we want to see change. So
yeah, I think that comes with growth. A lot of us don't even understand that we've been trained to fight against each other mm-hmm. in these situations, and it keeps us distracted,
right?
You know, and we're not really focusing on the real issues. You know, some people, but I realize what I do say, and we say this all the time, old skin folk and kin folk, and the reality is, a lot of people are intentionally misinforming us.
Oh, yeah.
Right there. Like, I posted something from the RZA, and it was talking about, I remember, you know, growing up in the hood, it was always the 5%ers. And, you know, I used to listen, and I just started to get in tune with mathematics. Mm. And he broke down what mathematics was, and he was talking about, and they always talked about the 5% nation. I just used to hear it, and I just thought they was cool, and they knew all the big words, and they knew about the atmosphere and the sun and all these things. So I like that. But when I was really listening to what he said, it's what I feel like I'm experiencing right now. Mm. And he said the 5% are the people who have the knowledge and understand what's going on, and they're righteous. They want to give the people the knowledge. They want to help people. They do it out of the kindness of their heart. Then there's 10% of people who have the knowledge, but they utilize it to game and scam people, mm. right? They know all of the things, and they know how to say the good words, and they know how to utilize you because they want to benefit off you. They want to play on you. And then the rest of the 85 people who don't know. You, as a 5%er, you're fighting against the 10%, and mm-hmm. there's more of them mm-hmm. than you. And then you're fighting to try to educate and help the 85. So your fight is really a lot.
95%.
95. Right. You're mm-hmm. fighting against 95% of the people mm-hmm. because a lot of the people don't know they're being misinformed. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. And a lot
with
of the
Harriet said, I could have freed a few more.
Yeah.
If they only
especially
knew.
With,
well, because, that's what they say Harriet said.
Yeah, I believe she said
right.
it. Because it makes sense to say, because I definitely believe that. And she said I should have shot some of you niggas. And I believe she said that too. Because a lot of these people, unfortunately, we got to get rid of them. Because they're going to be to the detriment of us.
Absolutely. I agree with you. Well, so again, shout out to our brother Plies. My thought of the day today. The last 2 months, I have spent a lot of time trying to just eat, be, see, live, support Black businesses, small businesses, And not just anybody's small businesses, pretty much our businesses. Mm-hmm. And my thought of the day is asking a person like me, a person who has a platform, how do we critique Black businesses? Mm. Right? How do we?
I think it's how it
has to be done, because we have to make sure that we call our people to our greatest self. Mm-hmm. Right? And you know, I think about last year, I ordered a coat from Mekaj. I was out of town for a few days. When I got back, the coat came, like, you know, it arrived early. They give you, I don't know, X, whatever days, I don't know, let's just say 10 days. Probably was more than that to make any alterations, changes or whatever, especially to get a refund. I didn't want a refund. I thought it was 3 days. In fact, when I posted about this, I thought I was 3 days late. But once they went through my transaction with me, I was actually 2 days late to get an exchange. I did not want, this was a $1,400 coat. I did not want a refund. I just wanted the smaller size because it was too big. Now, I know for a fact, no matter which business you're in, even with policies, policies are meant to be altered, broken, changed, depending on...
Or just a level of grace and courtesy.
Right, depending on how much you are, how you're, depending on your customer service acumen and how much you want to satisfy and please the customer, make sure the customer experience is good, especially when someone is not coming to you. I believe that if you request a refund outside of 30 days, 14 days, 10 days, whatever the time period is, you should not be allowed to get a refund, because that is a business model that you cannot
just keep wiggling. Yeah, we just want to make sure you're not just getting your money
exactly.
back.
Exactly. You can't be coming back.
You might already spent that. That's
whatever. It's just, I think that's true. But if someone says, hey, you know, I had a little situation. I was out of town. I'm just back. I saw it arrived early. I would like to just get the smaller size. And you have the smaller size sitting there with you. There's no way that a business should not say, let me make sure I get this to you, so that when someone sees you looking good in your smaller size, they can go say to, oh, yeah, of course. And I tell you, their customer service was amazing. They took care of me. Of course, there were some people in my, this went on for days and days, and it was a huge dialogue in my comment section where people were like, oh, well, no, well, there was some people. It was very, very rare, but there was the few that were like, you know, they was like, hey, you didn't make the timeline and that's it. And you got, you know, I'm a stickler for the rules. The rules are the rules. Listen, rules are broken in this world every single day. And there is no such thing as a good customer service process that does not have room for flexibility so that you can accommodate the needs of your customer base. You know,
because nobody wants to be with a company where you're spending a bunch of money that isn't willing to try to accommodate
you. Right, and it's not my only Mekaj coat. So I put it on social media. People started tagging them, which I didn't even ask for folks to tag them. I just basically said, this is what I went through. So I'm just letting y'all know, when y'all go to buy something from this particular company, you need to know what will happen. And of course, people started tagging them, and then they contacted me, which is a whole different thing. And they sent the small, they told me they wouldn't send the bigger size until I sent the coat. I did that. They got it back. They issued me the new coat. That's it. It was a simple thing. But, you know, unfortunately, them being embarrassed.
But that's elitist. That's what it comes down to. It's the fact that you have proximity to a level of notoriety.
I had actual and you have following. Access.
You know what I'm saying? Because if you were just a regular individual, then it wouldn't happen.
Well, sometimes it does, because sometimes it does. Sometimes just tagging a business in general will get you a response, even if you have two followers. Absolutely.
I've never seen that.
Oh no, it
I've never heard
does.
Somebody
Look,
say that happened.
Just saying, yes, it works for people. It doesn't work all the time, and you might not get the type of response that you would when you have a platform, but it does not matter. If you use your social media and you just tag a business, especially a business that they really monitor social media, see, some of them, they don't. And so when they start getting hundreds of people tagging them, then that's when it's like, oh, red alert, red alert. But if they are a business like a Verizon, I remember when I did not have a lot of followers at all, and I tagged Verizon about something, and they were on my line. But I will say a part of it is also who's running your customer service, who's running your business, who's handling your back office. Because I bet you that there was some senior level person who's not involved in the mundane day-to-day operations of the Macaj shipping and handling, who learned about it because somebody probably said, hey, I need to flag for you. There's a big conversation about us going on a person's page that has over 1 million followers. And then they probably said, what? Like, it's two to get the coat for the girl. Yeah. Like, what are we doing? Now, it brings me to my point. I've been spending a lot of time. I'm going to the restaurants. I'm doing the things because I realized that, you know, I am slightly bougie. I'm not going to, you know, I'm bougetto, very much so. And I do go to places, eat places, and go to places where I feel like I'm going to get the best, the quality customer service, the best experience. I do that. So I have to constantly challenge myself. That is a part of growth. I have to check myself and say, yo, have you supported enough Black businesses this week? And I literally will count. Like, actually supporting our people, mixing it in.
Yeah.
We have got to do better as Black business owners, okay? Restaurants with dirty dishes, you know, customer service issues, people sucking teeth. They ain't got, oh Lord, they didn't have no hot sauce at a restaurant last week, a Black-owned restaurant with fried chicken. And I was with some older women and they lost it. They lost it. What? And they said they were going to go out and report it and say, and I had to stop them. Stop and say, we can't do that. And that's the question that I have today. As a person with influence, right? Here I am. I have all of these followers. And by the way, I find dirty dishes in the big brand, in the big restaurants too.
So exactly.
Let me just make sure to say that. I'm just saying that over the last several weeks that I've been out, I've seen it a few times in our spots. You know, and it's not just dishes, it's other things. Again, it's people's attitudes. It's the response, the customer service time, the way people, shout out to Miss Bling Miami. This is somebody who, when I reached out to them with some issues with some clothes that they sent and I wanted to make some changes, they was on it. They emailing you back day and night. We have to upgrade the ways in which, and some people will sit here and tell me, well, it's the resources. We don't have the resources. Man, your attitude has nothing to do with the resources. If I tell you I'm going to be at your restaurant with a party of 20 at 6 o'clock and at 6:45, you still cleaning the bar and getting the situation together, we got to do better. And I respect the fact that we do need a lot more grace, that we need to be, you know, more understanding of the situation, and that we also have to be very careful about how we expose our own people and the type of harm that we could bring to a business that is employing our folks and that's a staple in our community. I get that. But I also feel a way about me putting my money down and I'm trying to have parties and events and bring people into these spaces. And here I am bringing my resources, my time, my attention. And then when things go wrong or when people give me attitude or they act like they don't feel like being bothered when I'm telling them, hey, this glass, I can feel food on it. I can see lip marks. Like, I don't want to eat behind the person who had this glass before me. I don't think that's fair. I don't think that anybody should have to pay for that. You're not giving me anything free. But here I am finding myself not willing to or not wanting to go out there and say anything about it because I'm trying to do the right thing. But then where is the reciprocation of that? Yeah. But especially in the service world, it has to get better. It has to, because as we encourage people to patronize our businesses, you know, my mama is, whew, she don't play. So you take her somewhere, she looking around. She want to see what's going on. She wants to make sure that it's a place that it lives up to the standard. And no, I do not feel that just because you're Black or anything else or Latino or whatever, that I should be okay with getting subpar service. No, I don't think so.
And now with that said, brings me to my music spotlight, you know.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
I'm Elia Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. ...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In this time of music where they celebrate people who killing and drilling and spinning, and they got the blick and all that, and they're killing everybody, we want to highlight some positive music. And today's highlight is a song that I found on Instagram that I hope is going viral. I've got thousands of comments on it. People seem to love this song. It's called The Honor Roll. Mm. And it's about five or six kids on there, and they're talking about positivity, about how they own the honor roll and how they got A's and how they're being celebrated for doing good stuff in school. Ain't nobody killed. And it has the same energy as the drill music. And get up, please support these young kids.
They're on your page.
They're on my page. It's pretty much going viral.
The honor roll.
You can find it anywhere. I think it started on TikTok, boss.daddy. And this is where I first seen it. I found it on Lovely7329. I've seen
Shout out to lovely 7329. But it's on your page.
But it's so on my page.
People can find
it. Yeah, you can find it there. But just go support those, because we do not support positivity in that type of energy. And those young kids, like, they got young kids that's 10 and 9 out here with guns and videos. Somewhere they're going to shoot and they're going to have sex, all type of shit.
But do those videos get support? I don't think so. I think they get a lot of comments.
They get a lot of support. They got record deals.
Well, that's true.
Like, they're signed by big artists who are actually in the videos with them while they talk this kind of nonsense. So shout out to these young kids who did something positive. They still dripped up and they still rizzed up. It's not corny. It's not outdated. It's not, you know, something that's just positive. So we just say, oh, we just want to celebrate positive. Now, I don't want that. I want good music. Mm-hmm. I want quality messages.
I want
good visuals. I want things that can actually compete with the culture right now. I want you to make positive music that's actually dope. And these kids did that, so shout them out.
That's what's up.
That's what's up.
All right, well, let's get into our guest. So, you know, for the last 5 months, we've been heavily engaged in the conversation around what is happening to the Palestinian people in Gaza. We have been calling for a ceasefire, which we will continue to do. We've taken a very, very, what I believe will be historic position that some people have, you know, certainly found fault with us in that. But I know that we're standing on the right side of history. And one of the things that has continued to be a part of the dialogue is the issue around Haiti and other places, the Congo, and so many places where people of super dark skin are also experiencing genocide and or, you know, extreme poverty, extreme depression, oppression, and suppression. And folks have been saying, why aren't you talking about these things? And of course, violence. And they said, you know, why aren't you talking about these things? And I don't think that it is, you know, well, certainly I know that it's not a lack of care, but sometimes a lack of information. I know I'm learning a lot about the Congo. And the reason why I can speak so well, the reason why we can speak so well to what is happening to the Palestinian people is because we've actually walked the grounds. We've been there. We visited Palestine. We visited Israel, and we understand the issue. We understand the occupation. We are very clear about what is taking place there because we were there firsthand. And in the Congo specifically, we have not been there. And so it is a process of learning and trying to bring people credible information, credible messengers. And I think today we have a very credible messenger who's joining us to talk about Haiti. Yes. Now, I have visited Haiti. Have you been to Haiti? I don't know.
I've never been to
Haiti. Yeah, so I've visited Haiti. I went not very long after the earthquake, along with Dr. Ron Daniels and a number of individuals from African Americans who went there to do very important work to bring, of course, resources. We helped with the school there, several schools. Also went to feed the community and to be one among the people and to learn the history. And so this is an issue that I've already been tapped in on. I understand so much about the people of Haiti and what they have experienced. And so when, again, talking about credible messengers, I'm excited, delighted to bring on the show today to TMI, a young woman who I found on Instagram. In fact, I made a comment on someone else's page, on Teslin's page, Teslin Figaro. I made a comment
Shout out to Tez.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one day she said, is anybody paying attention to what's happening in Haiti? Like, do we care? And I wrote that I'm watching images and learning, and this whole world just drives me crazy. It's just too many things going on at one time.
Yeah.
And someone said, if you want to learn more, you should go to this young woman's page. And I went there, and for the day, for the night, you know me, I was up, I was watching videos, I was listening to her commentary, and I found her to be an outstanding advocate, not just for the people of Haiti, but also for us as Black people, even here in America. And so I'm excited to bring our guest. I reached out, she reached right back. She said, let's get it on. Let's talk about it.
That's
and
right.
So today, let me introduce to some and allow others to be reacquainted if you're already following her. Dr. Bertrude Albert, Dr. PhD Bertrude Albert, who is the CEO and co-founder of P4H Global. And during her undergraduate degree, she and another young lady, went to University of Florida, Miss Priscilla Zela. I hope that is the appropriate way, but Zelaya. They co-founded PH4 Global, which was formerly Projects for Haiti. And they had traveled to Haiti separately on several occasions and realized that they shared an unwavering passion for the Haitian people. And so they decided to start this organization that she's going to tell us all about. Thank you so much for joining TMI today. I'm saying Dr. Albert, but I think it's okay for us to call you Bertrude.
Yes, definitely. Bertrude B. I am so honored and so thankful to be here with you all. You know, a special shout out to you all because with things going on in Haiti, I've been getting like a lot of requests from a lot of stations, international and global stations speak. And my fear has been that people will just take sound bites that sensationalize Haiti, that make things seem like they're not, that don't really get to the root of the problem. But when I went and checked out TMI, and I was able to learn about the work that you all are doing in exposing and speaking truth, I said, this is a platform, TMI, this is a platform that I need to partner with, that I want to be with. So thank you for this invitation. Thank you for allowing me to be here and speak my truth, our truth today.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for being here. And I just love the energy. You know what I'm saying? There's nothing, you have a beautiful spirit and energy that's welcoming. So we want to thank you for being here. I just want to know, give us a little bit about yourself. Just tell us a little bit about yourself, your studies, how you got to where we are today.
So I was born in Haiti, but then when I was a baby, I came to the United States. And it's interesting, growing up in South Florida as a Haitian American, I there was a lot of bullying for Haitians in South Florida. And so it was definitely a challenging time. Actually, growing up, I kind of hid the fact that I was Haitian. I wasn't really truly proud of my heritage and where I came from, because I didn't know who I was. All I knew was darkness, devastation, poverty. But then when I went to college, when I went to the University of Florida, go Gators, when I went to college and I learned that my people were the first free Black republic in the world, when I learned that my people created the first nation to permanently abolish slavery and the transatlantic slave trade, when I learned that Haiti was the first nation established in Latin America and the Caribbean, Haiti was the second nation established in the Western Hemisphere, when I learned these hidden gems, these hidden glories of my nation, I said, what have I been ashamed of? What? From that moment forward, I knew that the rest of my life would be spent towards seeing my country rise. And so, I mean, since college up until now, until my dying breath, I am going to continue to fight not only for Haiti, but also for, Tamika, as you mentioned, the Black race. I'm going to continue to fight for Black freedom, Black liberation, because we are much more than this narrative that just controls us and suffocates us. We will rise and have victory. I could go on for years, but I'm going to stop there.
No, I was with you. You
was giving it up.
Yeah. You know, when I hear you talk about the University of Florida, and I think about what is happening in Florida right now, the attacks against DEI in educational institutions, and just attacks against Black history in general, and attacks against Black people. It is very interesting, and I think a very big example you are setting here of why it is important for the education system to at least touch upon the history of all people, because that is where you gained a sense of self. So imagine if that information was not presented to you in college, and then you went through life continuing to sort of hide and diminish where you come from. And so when we talk about those bans and these political assertions, it is very, very dangerous. What would you say about that?
History carries an important part of our identity. And when we are rewriting history, when we're hiding parts of like how gruesome and disgusting slavery was, how detrimental slavery is, and how slavery still has an impact on American society today, on former colonies like Haiti. When we're hiding these truths, we are impacting the psychology, the minds of young Black people. Mm. We're not allowing them to realize how powerful, how great, how strong they are. We're not allowing them to realize that there are systems and structures that are in place that hold them back, institutionalized racism. We're not allowing them to truly understand the context. And as we do that, the self-worth begins to diminish. We begin to really blame ourselves for certain things that are happening in this world. And so I am an advocate. I am a passionate advocate for history, retelling history, ensuring that the narrative isn't one that supports white supremacy and that perpetuates these ideas of white supremacy, but one that shows the beauty of the Black race, Black people.
That's beautiful. So just trying to get an understanding, there's a lot of people who, like Tamika said, aren't informed. They don't know what's going on in Haiti. They don't know the history. They don't know anything. So right now, what's going on in Haiti? And try to give us a little bit of the history.
So as we know, like Haiti is dominating global headlines, TV, social media, radio, podcast. Haiti is dominating the news. Actually, I'm really surprised because there are so many experts on Haiti now, people that probably can't even pinpoint 10 different cities on the Haitian map. And yet everybody on TikTok, everybody on Instagram has become an expert in speaking so authoritatively about something most people don't truly understand. Yes, we are seeing gang violence. Yes, we are seeing a state of emergency in our capital, which it is not the Republic of Port-au-Prince. Our capital is Port-au-Prince. It is not the Republic of Port-au-Prince. It's the Republic of Haiti. Haiti is much more than just the capital city. Mm. All of Haiti, like where I work in the north and where I live half of the year in the north, we're definitely being impacted by what's happening. However, the burning tires and the insecurity and the gang violence, it's not widespread throughout the entire nation. It's really happening in the capital. But as we're looking at what's happening in the capital, we're looking at gang violence, we're looking at gangs exerting control and force in Haiti. It's much more than that. This is not a crisis of gang violence. This is a crisis of US imperialism. This is a fight for the sovereignty of Haiti. This is a fight for national autonomy. This is a fight for Haiti to rise up. And I'm going to go in history a bit for us to truly understand why this is, we're just looking at symptoms of a much larger problem when we're looking at the gang violence. And certainly we'll go into history to see that, but at face value, when we look at these gangs, we have to ask ourselves, where are these gangs getting ammunition from? Where are they getting the guns from? Because Haiti doesn't produce these guns and these ammunition. Where are they getting the? And not only that, but who stands to profit at the cost of so many Haitian lives? Who stands to profit at the cost of the capital being held hostage? I will tell you, our capital is being held hostage because our nation is being held hostage by the U.S. government. Let's dig deeper. Right now in Haiti, gangs are affiliated, they are supported, they are funded by political parties. One political party right now, the ruling political party, they actually have power and they have a puppet government that has been put into place by the U.S. government. Like, right. Let me be more specific. Ariel Henry, who still is the current prime minister of Haiti. He says that he'll step down, but he hasn't officially stepped down. Ariel Henry was put into power by the U.S. government with one simple tweet. When the Haitian president died, Jovenel Moïse, he died in July 2021. We had a prime minister, but with one simple tweet of the U.S. Representatives, they said that they support Ariel Henry. And all of Haiti is like, what are you talking about? He's an illegitimate prime minister. He was not put into power or voted in. He was not legitimized by any legitimate Haitian board. It was the United States that put him into power, propped him up there. And so as we look at that, for 30 long months, the Haitian people really had this anger and this frustration with Ali El-Anoui, not just because he was incompetent, which he certainly was, but they were upset because he represented U.S. imperialism. It was the United States who put this man into power, who propped him up because he would protect American interests.
Now, let's pause right there.
Yes.
Let's just be clear for those people who are listening, because I watched one of the spokespersons from the Biden administration try to skip over the question when asked, you know, several times, did you, you know, does the White House claim responsibility for this man taking leadership over Haiti? And he kept trying to, like, you know, skirt around it and dance that, no, that's not the case. You know, we want to make sure that Haiti is sovereign and whole and da-da-da-da-da. But the White House, we know them. We've worked with them for a long time. I've worked with them probably longer than both of you, so I know them very well. Wow. Nothing that they do is without thought and process. So they don't tweet just on a humble. They don't speak about you by accident. If you might get in a room by accident, you might, but they will correct it very quickly. And so to try to ignore the U.S. role in having this man to take occupancy of Haiti's government and become the leader, you can't separate the two. I think that's what I hear you saying.
That's exactly right. There is this stance that the U.S. government takes. It's like, no, Haitian problems come from Haiti, and Haiti must lead, and we have always been supporting democracy. And I mean, it truly is a form of gaslighting, because you don't have to search far to see that Ali El-Anoui, with one tweet, was put into power by the U.S. government. And so, again, we're out of place. And so one might ask, okay, B, help me understand this. How does that connect to gang activity? Let me draw the direct connection. Ali El-Anoui and his party have direct connections. They support gang activity. In fact, one of the leaders of one of the gangs, Barbecues is what they call him, he's gone on in interviews referring to Ali El-Anoui and how Ali El-Anoui gave him the power, gave him the resources, but now he's fighting to oust Ali El-Anoui because of corruption. And so historically, political parties in Haiti have funded gangs in order to protect their interests, in order to make sure that things go their certain way. But it's so interesting to see how the U.S. props up a government and that government props up gangs. So what we're seeing is a symptom of a much larger problem.
We understand. You just gave us a brilliant summarization of exactly what's going on right now. But we know that it didn't just start here. So where did this whole situation start?
What we're seeing right now is a fight for Haiti's sovereignty and autonomy. And that same fight began when Haiti declared independence, when Haiti said, we are a free, independent nation run by Blacks, a Black republic. So in 1804, Haiti overthrows our colonial power, the first and only nation to be formed because of a successful slave revolt. And when Haiti did this, Haiti became a threat to the world economy, because slavery fueled the economic growth of nations like the United States, like France. And so this very existence of a Black republic made the United States need to intervene, need to undermine the sovereignty and the independence and the freedom of this nation. Because if there is this free Black republic, they might inspire slave revolts in the United States, because the U.S. still had slavery in 1804. And so Haiti declares independence, and the U.S. responds by isolating Haiti. So destabilization through isolation. The United States did not recognize Haiti as an independent sovereign nation until 1862, nearly 60 years after Haiti's independence. And so again, like, it's like flashbacks. It's the same fight. recognize this as a nation, recognize our autonomy, recognize that Blacks can run a nation, that we can be a sovereign nation run by Black people. And there was a refusal to recognize our nation. And even in 1862, when the United States officially diplomatically recognized Haiti as a sovereign nation, that was only really just on paper. And that was only really just for the sake of saying we're going to send an ambassador to Haiti. But we continue to fight to be recognized, to have our independence recognized. For example, 1915 to 1934, the U.S. invaded and occupied Haiti. In this occupation, there is death, there is destruction, there is robbery. In fact, a lot of people don't know. To start off, to launch the U.S. occupation of Haiti, the U.S. Marines went into Haiti's National Bank, and completely robbed Haiti's gold reserve. They took that gold reserve and they brought it to New York for safekeeping, but that gold never returned back to Haiti. In fact, that gold was used to establish Citigroup, the most well-known and popular financial institutions in the United States. New York Times did a big article about that. Vlad from CBS recently was speaking about that. There has been a constant invasion, meddling, control of Haiti over the years. But then we fast forward, if we want to have a direct connection to U.S. undermining, destabilizing Haiti, we've got to look at 2004. Hey, in 2004, there was President Aristide. Regardless of where a Haitian stands on the political spectrum, whether they love him or hate him, Aristide was the first democratically elected president in Haiti. And the United States had problems with Aristide. He had been ousted before, and then he was brought to power. But in 2004, the U.S. had problems with him because Aristide went to the UN. He went to the public fighting for Haiti, saying that France, you made us pay the equivalent of $21 billion for our freedom. When we gained freedom in 1804, you then in 1825 forced us to pay what is now billions of dollars. You must pay us this money back because it was illegitimate and it was illegal. And so Aristide, having this power and having this voice, he presented a threat to the United States and to France. Because if Haiti can demand for reparations, what about the other former colonies? What about Black people in America? We then too can demand reparations. And so there are, New York Times does an incredible job outlining how Aristide demands this money and then the U.S. orchestrates an overthrowing of his government. In fact, a former French ambassador comes and he reveals, yes, the U.S. and France, they destabilized the Haitian government. They undermined Haiti's sovereignty by overthrowing the government. And then not only did they overthrow the government, but then in 2004, that same year, they created what is called the Core Group. And there's a lot of research on the Core Group. I encourage anybody that's listening.
The Core Group. The Core Group.
It's like the secret of politics in Haiti. So the Core Group, it is an informal group that's made up of international diplomats that come from United States, Canada, France. Already, there's a problem. Like, what? Mm. So this Core Group is in Haiti, and this informal organization is responsible for giving advice and for helping Haiti really establish democracy in Haiti. But the reality is, it's not about advice. It's not about helping guide. The Core Group is the instrument that is used in Haiti in order to select the president, in order to select the leaders of Haiti. In fact, the Core Group is the one that sent the tweet, "We support Ariel Henry. He is going to be the next prime minister." So the creation of the Core Group, a lot of scholars, when they're looking and they're dissecting this idea of the Core Group, they say that this Core Group is what controls politics in Haiti. And politics is what gives birth to gangs in Haiti. Again, I hope that I'm making these connections that
we appreciate it. Yeah. It's important. Well, we know. I mean, America has also helped to back the gangs in the U.S. Forget about all the other places around the world, but we understand what it looks like for our government to destabilize communities, to destabilize so many things in terms of our race, us as a people, our communities. And we just think about the Black Panthers, right? Let's think about anything, even in our civil rights movement, anything that has happened that has been about the betterment of Black people or people of African descent. The United States government, and we can go from president to president to president and from administration to administration, has had some role in the destabilization of those things, because there has to be a, as we always say, in order for there to be a top, there has to be a bottom. And when you think about capitalism and how all of this is driven by capitalism, it is very difficult to maintain that without having a certain power structure. And I would venture to say even further that a part of ensuring the destabilization of people of African descent means that you keep us uneducated and unwilling and unable to fight, because we are the biggest, best, baddest, most organized fighters against any type of injustice in this world's history, based upon how we got here and the struggles that it took for us to birth where we are today. So you right on it. I mean, in my judgment,
100%.
So we don't want, I mean, there's so much more. And I hope that what people get from this is that they begin to not just follow you, but that they begin to do their research of 1804 to understand the connection and how Haiti has continued to be, and these are not my words, but it is to give a description, the bastard child of the world. They are pissed off with Haiti for daring to stand up to Europeans. And I want you to talk about the reparations that Haiti has been paying out of the bank in Haiti has been paying the oppressor. I don't know if it's still happening now, but paying its colonizer. I mean, this thing is...
It's rough. It's really rough.
It's deep, you know, so I want to hear about that. But I hope that people will not just stop at a podcast, but that they will actually do do their work, their research. Because my son, well, I'll say that, I'll save it for after, because we don't want to put our politics on Bertrude. So go ahead, Bertrude, talk about the reparations, which I don't even know how, I mean, that word is, it is literal. Right? Like, people think about reparations, yes. They're thinking about us as African people being paid for our story. But there was an actual reparations payment to the colonizers, which was France, by the Haitian government.
Let's go back in time. 1804, gain our independence. The U.S. doesn't recognize Haiti. But it's not just the U.S. The entire world doesn't recognize Haiti. And this is difficult for Haiti in several terms, like not having diplomatic relations, that impacting being able to ship, that impacts the growth of the nation. So Haiti is really fighting to be recognized by these world powers. Finally, in 1825, underneath Haitian President Boyer, France comes to Haiti and says to Haiti, we will recognize you. Mm. However, you will pay 150 million francs, which later gets decreased to 90 million francs. But you will pay us 150 million francs in order to repay us for our lost property. And part of the lost property were our Black bodies, like Black people. You understand what I'm saying? It's the wildest, most absurd request. And some ask, why in the world did Haiti even agree to it? I could take hours to really dissect why Haiti agrees. I mean, gunboats were being sent to Haiti. There was threat for another invasion, and Haiti had just won this 13-year revolution, didn't want to go into another revolution. Not only that, this idea of reparation, it didn't just start when Boyer was there. It actually started with another president, Pétion. So there's a lot going on to why Haiti actually caved into this pressure, but Haiti agrees to pay 150 million francs. It gets decreased to 90 million francs. Haiti did not finish paying France back until 1947. Let me say that again. 1947. Right. And here's where the US government, and I say this, I know I don't owe this explanation. I think that the United States has so many opportunities for immigrants like myself, so many opportunities for people, but US foreign policy historically just chokes nations, nations that look like me. US foreign policy needs to be dissected. And so this is not a I hate America type of speech. Mm-hmm. This is a let's take a look at what the United States is doing, what the US government is doing, and let's expose it because it's evil. So let's go back. This, how is the United States connected to France? Because it was France that forced Haiti to pay this this 150 million francs, which goes down to 90 million francs, the equivalent of $21 billion, which side note, it's not even just about the $21 billion.
That's outrageous.
That is important. But when you take Haiti's money like this, you take money that we can be investing in roads, in hospitals, in education. Mm-hmm. We can be investing in the very fabric of our nation, but then you rob us of the opportunity to grow. It makes me so mad.
And then
you
some people ask why there are gangs.
To flourish.
I mean,
they always say poverty.
The poverty is violence, you know, and rebellion is the voice of the oppressed. And it's like to not understand why gangs exist in different nations, especially nations who have been, you know, dealing with what Haiti has dealing with, just all around this nation. And not and see, this is what they call the resistance. You know, there's no group of people that should be comfortable and happy to be starving, to be crucified, to be living in below humane conditions. There's nowhere in the world that should happen. So I just want to know, like, what is the future? What is the future of Haiti for you? What do you see? What do we want to see? What do we believe it should be?
Freedom. The future of Haiti is freedom. And I'll get deep into what I mean by that. But like with everything in me, I believe that as dark as times may be, and as tight as the US's grip on Haiti's neck is, freedom, we're destined for freedom. In 1804, our ancestors, they proved that we can do the impossible. When all odds are against us, we're able to come together and overthrow. Where there is oppression, there will be rebellion. There will be a revolt. There will be victory. Freedom, I believe, is our future. And what does that mean? Freedom from imperial powers, specifically the United States and Haiti. We will reach a day where Haitians will lead Haiti. It's crazy that it's as simple as that. It's not even the biggest ask. It's like just the recognition of our humanity, giving us the dignity and the honor that we deserve as a Black nation. Allow us to lead ourselves. Stop meddling inside of Haitian affairs. And I believe that that's going to be happening through social media. I'm inspired when I think of Jean-Jacques Dessalines, Toussaint, Annick Belair, some of these Haitian heroes. But I know that today, we have more power than our ancestors did because we have their story to inspire us. But in addition to that, we have social media. We're able to expose what the US is doing. We're able to expose what these Western powers are doing in the United States. And as we speak about it more, like what you all are doing, as we shine light and allow Black America and Black people around the globe and even our allies to be aware of what's going on, we expose and we bring light. Freedom is our future.
Well, please tell us, Virtue, as you leave Dr. Albert, what does P4H Global do and how can people support your work?
So P4H Global, we are training teachers to transform Haiti. Our main goal is education because at the end of the day, this crisis we're seeing in Haiti, it's going to go away. We'll have another crisis come in the future, but this current crisis is going to go away. What we are going to need is a strong educational system that develops Haitian leaders for the 21st century, Haitian leaders that can really take charge, Haitian leaders that have critical thinking, that have collaboration, Haitian leaders that are able to lead Haiti into the bright future that we have. And so I believe, not just me, the research shows that quality education is the prerequisite to the development of any nation. And so even before this crisis, I have been in the business of improving the quality of education in Haiti. 60% of Haitian students drop out before they finish elementary school. And I want to make that statistic obsolete. 6 out of 10 drop out before finishing elementary school? Mm, no, not with my people, because knowledge is power. Mm-hmm. So I want to leave our people with the power so that we can destroy the system like we destroyed the system of slavery. So again, we do teacher training. A lot of organizations in Haiti, they go, you know, they build schools. Haiti doesn't have a lack of schools. We have an abundance of schools. The quality of the schools is what is the problem. You could build 30 million schools, but if students are dropping out, why have these schools? So I have a team of about 50 full-time trainers, and we work in all 10 of Haiti's departments. We travel to these schools. We coach the teachers, coach the directors, coach the school inspectors. We walk alongside of them to see the improvement of students. You could actually see this picture right here up there of a student. I actually snapped this photo right there. So my goal is improving the quality of education so that we can secure Haiti's bright future.
So how do we support you?
If people can follow our journey, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook. Certainly follow our journey and share our story, not just our story, but the story of other organizations like Ensei Pour Haïti is an organization I love, UND. These organizations that are investing in education, I think that there needs to be more focus on education. After this crisis, let's ensure that our educational system is really, really strong. So support us by sharing our story, following along on the journey. Of course, financial support is always needed for a nonprofit, especially during these times. People are leaving Haiti left and right, and people that would have donated have Haiti fatigue left and right. So supporting us financially is a really big deal. So again, social media, financially supporting us. But then the third and probably more important, most important way to support work is help expose what's happening in Haiti. Continue to talk about U.S. imperialism in Haiti, because when we solve this problem of U.S. imperialism and meddling in Haiti, it enables my work to go along a bit easier. Right now, the five departments of the South, we can't travel and work with our schools. Many of our schools are shut down. We can't work with our teachers. My work, it's almost as if like you've got chains on our hands and we can't work towards the development of Haiti because of this crisis. If we can solve this crisis and expose what's happening, you give me freedom to fight for the freedom of my people.
I know we could just go on and on about this because you seem so well-versed and knowledgeable and passionate, you know, and I agree with you that freedom is definitely the ultimate, you know, space for Haiti. And I believe we'll get there. We're dealing with so many different things in this nation right now, and everyone is just trying to figure out what we can do, you know, and I just want to thank you for doing your part. You know, the way that you inform on social media and utilize the platform, I know that, you know, they're probably trying to shadow ban you and you get all of those type of things, because our pages have been shadow banned for just speaking truth to power. But continue to be that light. Continue to speak truth to power, even though, you know, you're passionate about your people and about what's going on in Haiti. There's still this glow that you have, right? You speak passionate, but it's not anger. And a lot of people would be overtaken with anger, which is why we have gangs and you see the fighting and all that. But just seeing someone with the energy that you have, it inspires me to continue on and want to know what's going on and want to contribute to the fight. So continue doing what you do.
Dr. Bertrude Albert, thank you so much. And we want to continue to uplift P4H Global. You continue doing your work, as my son has said. Thank you for coming on. And anytime that you need us to share a thing, say a thing, say the things you don't think you can say, because we already in trouble everywhere all the time. So let us be your mouthpiece. Let us be your foot soldiers to get the work done.
I appreciate you all so much. Thank you for this time. Thank you for the space. My soul needed this conversation with you two today. Thank you.
Thank you for joining TMI.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have like one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. ...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6
million. Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I like Dr. Albert. Like
I love her energy. She has amazing energy. Like speaking about something she's passionate about, and you know it's painful, she still has just a joyous demeanor and energy about it.
But she's also very educated. You know, as she was speaking, I was thinking to myself, as a young person growing up in New York, in Harlem specifically, I met a lot of Haitians. They went to Catholic mm-hmm. school. And I don't know one that is not brilliant, like highly educated. You know that, you know, they spend a lot of time, and I think it is a part of Caribbean culture in general to ensure that you are like more educated than any and everybody else so that you can shine and sort of I guess, you know, fight fight back against these narratives, these negative stereotypes. And I think that's a, you know, you can see that in her, that her parents were like, you are going to learn if nothing else. And I love that. I love that about her. I want us to continue to work with her and to support what she's doing, because Haiti, when I was there, it is a very challenging space to maneuver. For a lot of different reasons. Of course, the politics, the corruption, and of course the poverty. And then also it has sort of, like, thinking about us, you know, we've been talking so much about the film origin. It has its own caste system, right? And so it's difficult to navigate. But one thing I learned while I was there is that of all the issues, I mean, they were just out of a devastating earthquake. But what I noticed is that every day, no matter what, no matter where they live, no matter how depressing the communities, we cried, you know, it was so heartbreaking because even before the earthquake, they still had these horrific challenges. The kids would be dressed beautifully on their way to school, all hair done, barrettes, pretty barrettes, looking good, haircuts, clean, neat. And it's almost impossible. Like, I don't know. And you know, I'm a clean freak, 100%. But I don't know how clean I could be if I was living in a situation where I'm pretty much having, because of, again, all of the infrastructure issues, having to wash outside, like having to literally wash clothes in the basin. You know, that's really literally how some communities are living. And to see them get those kids' shirts pressed, get into school every morning looking perfect, pristine. And that said a lot to me about the culture. Again, going back to my point about education, that is something that they don't play. The dignity is incredible. And I think that's what we sense coming from Bertrude.
There's a lot of pride. I have Haitian friends and met a lot of Haitian people, and they have like a lot of pride. You know, I don't know if they've all been brilliant. Like, you know, like Kodak is a little crazy, so I don't know about
Well,
brilliance.
I don't know if he...
There might be levels of brilliance.
Right.
There's levels of, because you look at the level of talent, so there is brilliance. And a lot of times people just play a role because they understand it's entertainment.
Absolutely. But, well, and also your trauma, the issues
the trauma,
you have
exactly,
can suppress the brilliance.
Yeah. So we have those things, but overall, you know, I've never been to Haiti, but there are a lot of representation of Haitians that are positive. Like, and knowing that they come from situations like that, you know. But this is where they call shithole countries.
Right, this is what this Donald is what Trump called the shithole country.
I didn't say it. That's what Trump said.
That's what
but
he
you
said.
Know,
yeah.
They'll say,
that's
that
why
boy
I said
Trump.
It's the bastard nation of the world, right? The bastard child of the world, because they want to sun it and treat it different and other and not give it the proper resources. And then people keep talking about gangs. First of all, who else they gonna fight? It's not like the people that they're angry with, American government, our foreign policy directors and all the people who work there, they're not walking around the streets of Haiti. So it's not like they could go.
But I don't understand why people
folks
don't understand the reality of gangs, right? Gangs are formed out of desperation, right? Gangs are formed out of lack of unity, out of lack of resources, out of lack of opportunities. Gangs form inside of impoverished communities because people need to belong. They need to have resources. They align with other people who are trying to get something that somehow appeal to the need for unity, right? Because that they lack those things inside the community. You don't see gangs outside of impoverished communities. When we look at,
they got different types,
exactly,
because the mob was a gang.
No, but the mob came from poverty. These were people that came from Italy, poor, right? And they seen all the rest of the nationalities excelling, and they came here and figured out we gotta click up together because we're the outcasts here. People don't give us anything. They look down upon us. And they created their own finances. They created their own ecosystem. And that's the only thing that happened with gangs. When you have to create your own way to survive, when you have to protect yourself, when you know that we're the only people that come from our country over here, and we're the outcasts, and you know, and we have to create something. Unfortunately, it comes from violence. Like we say, poverty is violence. And most of these, every gang without the nation, if you look at the the inception of every gang in this world, it starts with poverty.
It's sort of like a revolution.
It is. It's a revolutionary. Sort of like revolution. You know, it always starts with poverty. We look at the Bloods and Crips in America, right? It started as the answer to police violence in the communities. They originally started because they
were... So is that poverty or is it oppression?
It's both. Because poverty is... All of those things, they all interchange. Like, when you only see oppression where poverty exists. You can't oppress people that have the resources to do whatever they want. My I don't get it of today is something that, you know, I've been on social media, you know, I've been in a hood pretty much my whole life. And we grew up with this narrative, right? It's just free my mans, free my mans, free my mans. And as I get older, and especially I look on social media, I see this growing trend with people who are doing heinous and egregious things. People that are doing things that should go against the average, quote-unquote, real dude's moral compass, right? And they saying, free him and free him. And I'm like, why are we saying free somebody that we know stabbed a girl or shot a girl or did this and that or harmed the older person who robbed old people? Like, why are we advocating that there's no accountability in our communities for people that are really detrimental to the communities? That's not, because I understand, and even though I don't agree with, I understand certain things that go on in our communities. There is, you know, the streets. When you sign up for the streets, you and that person that deal in the streets, you got to deal with what comes with that. Mm-hmm. But when you start, you know, you start harming civilians and you start doing things that's really detrimental to the community, and you go against things that we all should stand against as a man, and everybody's screaming, free him, and you don't want no level of accountability, yeah, support your man, right? Go give him, put something on his books, go visit him, have conversations with him, help him to be rehabilitated, help him grow, you know, and hopefully when he re-enters society after he's held accountable, you know what I'm saying, he can move properly. But I no longer subscribe that we should be just yelling, free him, to everybody that's locked up. I just don't subscribe to that no more. You know, and I don't know, and I don't know why us is, and I think it's just about us growing. I think as you grow and you start really paying attention to certain shit, it's just like, nah, I understand. Like, I love him. It's my man, but he did some shit that he got to be held accountable for. And hopefully, you know, him taking that accountability, he going to make it home safe. And he going to come out and he going to be a better person because he's held accountable for certain shit.
Well, outside of rape. And you know, of course, murder, but even in those two instances, I believe that prison should be abolished. Right?
So you don't think they should lock up rapists?
Yeah, I do. But I still believe that there are things that could be done from childhood to address behaviors, especially family trauma and other things that if we weren't spending our money on everything and doing any and everything else, if fattening people's pockets and dealing with other stuff that has nothing to do with the actual strength and success and health of our people, we might be able to get in front of individuals' mental, whatever they have going on that causes rape and other things, right? So we don't focus enough on mental health in this country. Working within the current system, if you rape a person, especially a child, anybody, yes, certainly, I believe you should be held accountable. You murder people, you should be held accountable, all of that. I wouldn't say no. Mm-hmm. I do think the system has to change because I think there's much more preventative, many more preventative measures that could be used. So that's one. But I also know and understand deeply that part of the problem is our desire to fight the system, not the people. So really,
but it's not even even a desire to fight the system at this point. It's just to me, I believe it's just celebrating bad behavior. I don't see it as, yo, the system is this and that because...
Right. Well, I don't know if people are able to or even conscious of the way to articulate it. But the issue is that it comes from a mindset that the police locked him up, The courts are bad. The jails are terrible. The system is bad. And so when people start saying free my man, they're not always considering the actions of the individual, but more so saying out of this, you know, freedom from the system. That's what I hope, because I see people do it. And I'm sure I have. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that, you know, I have done that in the past. I want to free my family member. But then my new posture with my family members is if he sold crack, or if he killed people, or if he was involved in illegal activity, don't call me, right? Not to say don't call me to write a letter or send commissary, to your point, but don't be calling me telling me, yo, man, they need you to come down here, man.
And that's what it is for me. It's just like, I just think as we get grown and you understand that there are consequences and ramifications for actions, and I no longer want to just celebrate and incentivize bad behavior and stupidity, right? And because that's what's happening. A lot of these young kids who are engaging in this violence, they're seeing the celebration of the people, right? They're seeing such and such go to jail for murder, and everybody's saying free him, and it seems like he's way more famous than he was in the street, right? That you get this level of notoriety for being notorious, and it's like it's not conducive to the, you know, the evolution of our culture and for our young people. So at this point for me, like, I just don't get it, you know, and I think we gotta pay close attention at the message that we're sending these kids, because they are watching and just listening to what they believe is protocol in the streets and what they believe is should be celebrated, how they believe they should move and how they really grasp this information, and they got it from this culture. Mm. It's really crazy to me. And I'm like, damn, we really doing these babies a disservice. Wow. You know, for me, that's what it is.
Well, you know what, Mice? I'm very proud of the work you've been doing, specifically of the Boycott Black Murder work. We have so many people pouring into that aspect of what we do. And you really carry that on your back.
Well, I appreciate it. And, you know, I just want to say thank you for allowing me and having faith and believing in the abilities that I had to offer to this movement and to our culture, and giving me the confidence, you know, because I didn't always feel as confident about what it is that I didn't believe I belonged in certain rooms. I didn't believe that I knew the stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, sometimes I go and I'm doing this work and we lose a child. You know, we lose a young man. We somebody actually got killed that I was just with, that I was trying to you know, help redirect mm-hmm. to a different direction, and it didn't work. So it's always a process, but
it's a give and take.
It's a give and take. That brings us to the end of another wonderful episode of TMI, the number one podcast in the world. Tamika and Maison's information, truth, motivation, and inspiration.
Yeah.
We want to thank our guest, Dr. Bertrude Albert. Yeah, the wonderful.
Bertrude Albert.
She's amazing. Stay in tune with what's going on in Haiti. Pay attention. There's a lot going on in this world. We ain't going to always be right, and we're not going to always be wrong. Tamika's going to be wrong way more than my son is, but we will both always, and I mean always, be authentic.
Peace.
That's how we own it. That's how we own it. That's how we own it.
Check out the video version of TMI
every single Wednesday on iWoman.tv.
That's how we own it!
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie.
Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.